scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguilla. Three bounce, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Okay, happy Friday. We are underway on this hour of Flames Talk. It is Friday, March 22nd with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. My name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to Flames Community Arenas. We're here later on Friday. It's our fifth annual Sportsnet 960 Wild Rose Brewery Beer League game. Looking forward to that a little bit later on this Friday. But right now, we get things going. Pat, Wes on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. And we kick off the sports drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. Hello, Wes. Happy Friday, buddy. Welcome back.
How are you, buddy?
Good. We missed you. We missed you on the show on Thursday. I had to deal with Vickers for an entire 2 hours on Thursday.
Yeah, that's a lot of Vixie, isn't it?
No, it's good. It was wonderful. It's good to have you. We got lots to talk about this hour. Daily Flames Roundtable coming up in the second half of this hour. We'll spend a good chunk of the Daily Flames Roundtable on the Elias Lindholm trade and the fact that Lindholm plays his former team, the Flames, for the first time on a Saturday night. But right now, let's go inside hockey for Calgary Co-op. It's that time to stock up for the celebrations that matter with ingredients that help make memories. Visit Calgary Co-op, where life's in store. And Wes, we now have less than a month until the end of the regular season for the Flames. 14 games to go, and I know the Flames are still mathematically alive, and mathematical life for a playoff spot still remains, but let's be honest, they're 10 back with 14 games to go. It's a very unlikely circumstance, and so I don't think we're jumping the gun by suggesting the Flames are playing out the string. Yeah, that's not us being defeatist. I'm sorry, Wedley, that's not us trying to rain on your parade, but realistically, we try to deal in realism.
Yeah.
They're probably playing out the string.
Yeah, I think that seems fair to me. I mean, you know, the Vegas Golden Knights are not exactly going like a house on fire, but 10 points over a 14-game stretch, that's a heck of a haul. And you're not just talking about Calgary as the chase pack there. So, yeah, it sure feels to me like despite a pretty valiant effort to stay in that wild card race for a while, I think we're in next year country here.
So that means there's 14 games until the end of the regular season. That means there's 14 games for the Flames to try some different things, to check some different things out, and for us, people like you and I, to put together maybe a little bit of a wish list in terms of what we want to see between now and the end of the regular season. And I've come up with a few things. I know you've come up with a few things. We'll get the text line engaged at 960-960. What do you want to see from the Flames between now and the end of the regular season, whether it be lineup decisions or line combinations, recalls, whatever the case may be? What do you want to see between now and April 18th when the Flames play game 82 of this regular season? We'll get to the text line. Get your text in at 960-960. You want to start or you want me to start?
You start.
Okay. I'll start with a easy one. I'll start with a kind of on-the-nose one and something that we've talked a lot about this week. But I want to see at least 7 starts for Dustin Wolf. I want to see him get at least half of the remaining workload, if not more, between now and the end of the regular season. Vickers and I got into this on Thursday, and you know, we kind of were talking about the ideal starts and what's the ideal split. And I do think there is a balancing act. I do think you need to consider both players. You need to consider the future, but you also have to consider a couple of things with Markstrom. He might be back next year. You have to consider the fact that he is a fiery competitor and, you know, he's an established veteran that is extremely well respected in that locker room. So I think you need to take that into account. At the same time, I think you need to take into account the future, the bigger picture, and the fact that Dustin Wolf is very possibly this team's goalie of the future. So for me, I think 7 is a nice target. If it ends up being 8, great. But I think I'd like to see at least seven Dustin Wolf starts between now and April 18th.
Yeah, you know, Pat, I have some regrets. I should have said I'd go first because I'm pretty sure that you just read that off this piece of paper I have in front of me.
I have my own.
Seven starts for Wolf. It's written right here.
Look, you see it right there. I did my own email to myself.
I'm having trouble. Well,
now
I'm having trouble reading that.
Now the
yeah.
journalist is having trouble.
You know, I think seven is probably an ideal number, and I say that for two reasons. I like the idea of getting Dustin Wolf to 15 starts on the season. You know, I think that would be a good chunk for a guy as he transitions from, I guess, part-time NHLer to full-time NHLer next season, and I believe, as everyone who's listening knows, that that should be the case. I think 15 is a pretty good body of work for a guy to understand, okay, what's it look like at this level? What do I need to do better? Where do I maybe measure up? Where do I need to improve? All that stuff. And so I also think seven down the stretch, that leaves Jacob Markstrom seven, and that's not so much about Markstrom as it is an opportunity again for Wolf to study Markstrom, to learn from his game day routine, to take all those extra shots and get that extra work that a backup goalie gets on game days. I think that part of it is important as well. And so I like the idea of Dustin Wolf starting seven down the stretch. Could it be more than that? Yeah, but can he learn just as much from job shadowing Jacob Markstrom on seven of those nights as he could from being in the crease himself? I believe he can, especially in, you know, you hear so much about Jacob Markstrom's leadership, and I hope that shines through over the next few weeks because a young Dustin Wolf could learn so much from Jacob Markstrom. I know. You know, you talk to everyone about Dustin, and you hear a lot of, well, he's a student of the game. He's constantly asking questions. What could I have done differently here? What, you know, I shared on the show a couple days ago, Mackenzie Skapski, the Wranglers goalie coach, told me he gets texts from him right after games. Hey, did you see this goal?
Yep.
You know, what was my issue here? Or how could I have played that different? And I just think Jacob Markstrom, a guy who has been widely respected for not just the way he stopped pucks, but the leadership that he can bring inside the Flames room. If he is willing to be the other side of that sponge, you know, if he's willing to share so much of what has made him successful with Dustin Wolf, I think these final few weeks could really be impactful in Dustin Wolf's career and ultimately in the long-term success of the Flames at the goaltending position.
When you say get him to a nice 15 start round number, it's funny. I know that the Flames really at no point this season, it ended up working out this way, but not by design. It was more because of circumstance. But remember how, you know, my middle ground going into the season where you were very much, no, they should make a spot for Dustin to be here full time. My middle ground was kind of spot start him and use the fact that you have the American League team in Calgary to kind of shuttle him in for games here and there and choose some spots for him to go. Now, again, it didn't work that way. Dustin started games this year because of injury. You know, stretches where Jacob Markstrom was out, that stretch in February when Dan Vladar was out with the hip injury that he's getting surgery for next week. But he's still, like, that was kind of my target. Can you get Dustin 10 to 15? Can you take that? Can you get that intermediary step between, is that a word, intermediary? Can you get that middle step between being an American leaguer and a full-time NHLer and get him somewhere in the middle? And 15, I think, would hit that intermediate step very, very well. So I think that's a nice number to try to aim for, too. I like that.
You know, I was just pulling up the stats because I know that not only do the Flames look at UC Saros as sort of a body type comparable to Dustin Wolf, you know, Saros is sort of the shining example of how an undersized goalie needs to have success in the modern NHL, but they also look at him as sort of a model for the development path. And so I just wanted to pull that up because it was 19 starts for him in what was sort of his second NHL season.
Like
Dustin Wolf, he played one NHL game the previous year and then a bump up to 19. And the other guy they look at is that Thatcher Demko, there's a lot of conversation about sort of his development path, and he was only 8 starts in his second season at the NHL level. Now, where Demko becomes a great example is who was his mentor?
Jacob
Markstrom. Was his role model? Yep. Jacob Markstrom. And so, yeah, I like, you know, I don't know that 15's the number I necessarily would have pinpointed at the start of the season, but if you can finish Dustin Wolf with 15 starts in this, his third season of pro, third season of pro hockey.
Stockton, Calgary.
Yeah, I think that'd be a sweet spot, personally.
Okay, so that's kind of the number one thing that we'd like to see. I threw out my idea that Wes didn't also share, at least 7 starts for Dustin Wolf. You go next. What would be next? Don't take a look at my cheat sheet. What would be next on your list?
You know, I'm going to stick with a couple of the young guys, and I'm sure that our conversation will mostly focus on the younger dudes on this Flames roster, but I would like to see glimpses of both Connor Zary and Martin Pospisil at center down the stretch. And I'll be honest, I'm not sure that either is best suited to... I'm not sure that either is best suited to play center at the NHL level. You know, I worry that some of that sort of fearless cutting to the middle to generate offense that Connor Zary has done such a great job of from the wing, I think that's going to be a little more difficult for him at the center of the ice. I'm not sure that Martin Pospisil, given the extra duties that a center has in the defensive zone, is best suited because of how effective he is as a forechecker to not be working the wing. You and I talked about this with Wilsey on the round table, and his worry was, does Martin Pospisil's speed, which is one of his greatest assets, get lost at center? And it very well might. I just want to see it. Those are two guys who were drafted, let's say, as centers, certainly. With Martin Pospisil especially, I think it was in mind early that he might be better off as a winger. But
yep.
He was a guy who played a lot of center at the junior level, has even played a decent amount of center at the pro level for a guy who doesn't have a ton of pro game experience due to all those injuries. Connor Zary played his first season of pro as a center before they wanted to experiment with him on the wing because they were worried about the pace. Now, the pace has actually improved a ton for Connor Zary. We've talked about that a lot. But as we get into experimenting time, as we get into, you know, let's see how this looks, those are two guys I'd like to see up the middle of the ice.
I did not have Pospisil. I did have Connor Zary written down. I'd like to see, I wrote down Connor Zary down the middle for a little bit. I'd like to see that as well. Because, and the Pospisil makes a lot of sense too, because the Flames are going to need to find centers after Kadri and Backlund.
Yep.
And, like, Kadri is 33. Backlund just turned 35. By no means does this make them old, but, you know, in an NHL life cycle, they are closer to the end than they are at the beginning at this stage. And so they're going to need to find contingency plans. And while I don't think they've got that quote-unquote number one center in the organization right now, maybe they've got a number two center. Maybe Connor Zary can be that second line center on this team going forward. And now you're looking at, can the Flames, via trade or in the draft over the next 2-3 years, find that number one center to build around? And now you've got yourself a really nice plan going forward. So I'd like to see it with Zary. And I think, why not with Pospisil? So there's nothing to lose in my eyes if you do 2 or 3 games with Pospisil down the middle and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And he's like, nah, you know what? He's a better winger. We're going to put him back on the right side. And that's how we see him going forward. Okay, that's fine. But what if it does work? What if all of a sudden you see a lot of promise? So I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, it just makes sense to find out what sort of versatility you have on your roster. And, you know, you mentioned obviously the age of Backlund and Nazem Kadri. Those guys are going to play at a high level for a couple more seasons, but you have to be looking at the future of the center position, right? You know Yegor Sharangovich can play it. Do you like him better at center or the wing? That's a conversation you're having at the Saddle Dome all offseason as you try to peg where he fits best long term. You know, you know Connor Zary has experience at center. Can he do it at the NHL level? Can Martin Pospisil do it at the NHL level? We'd be having, I think if he was a little further along, we might be having the same conversation about Matt Coronato. You know, he's a kid who played center and quite effectively for a really good college program. He's a guy who played center at the World Championships last season. Now, I'm not here saying that I think Matt Coronato should be a center at the NHL level, but as you try to figure out, okay, what do we have in the pipeline here for centers, you want to know where all these guys fit, because your center depth has taken such a huge hit, not just with the Lindholm trade, but with Adam Ruzicka being claimed off waivers, right? That was another young center. We saw Dylan Dubé at that position often. He's no longer going to be in the Flames organization. And so, you know, there you need to find out what you have in the cupboards before you figure out, okay, what do we need to shop for? What are we trying to trade for? What are we trying to sign? What are we trying to draft? I think this experiment with both Zeri and Pospisil is an important part of that.
We'll do see if we get one more each in here. I'd like to see, and then we'll hit the text line. I'd like to see a couple of recalls, and maybe it's only for a game or two each, but I'd like to see Grushnikov, and I'd like to see Jeremy Poirier get a recall, and I'd like to see them both make their NHL debuts. I mean, Brustevich, as we talked about with Wilsey earlier this week on a roundtable, I'd like to see that too, but it might not work out with the OHL playoffs. But I would like to see Grishnikov get maybe one or two in, and I'd like to see Jeremy Poirier get one or two in. Maybe it's just game 82. Maybe it's just game 81, something like that. But I'd like to see that more than anything else, because it would be cool to see him. I think it would be cool for fans to see him. But I also think it would be a real nice kind of carrot dangled for two guys who you see as important pieces going forward. Get that NHL game in, understand the pace, understand how the level ramps up that much more, so that there's just a little bit of that taste going into the offseason and into their offseason training.
Yeah, and it would be hard for me to argue, except for the fact that the Flames only have two recalls remaining. And we know that you can sometimes work your way around that with a flu bug in the locker room or what have
Hang
you.
Nail.
Poirier is at the top of my list of guys that I would like to see. I believe he'd have NHL games on his resume already if it wasn't for the scary skate injury, the laceration that cost him most of this season. He's only been back for 2.5 weeks or so now.
He's almost point per game, but
but a lot of those came before the injury.
True.
Now, that would be the guy at the top of the list for me. I'm totally fascinated by Grushnikov, and so I wouldn't say I don't want to see him, but I also think if his play warrants it, you could do a lot of long-term good for Jacob Pelche by bringing him back up, by having a couple of last games for him at the NHL level this season to show him. And I know they keep telling him that he's a part of it long term, and I don't think Jacob doubts that, but this has been such a, I don't want to even say roller coaster campaign for Jacob, because there hasn't been much up, right?
It's been mostly down.
There's been two injuries. There's been frustration with how he's played when he has been in the lineup. There's been, as he told me earlier this week, kind of a lack of confidence that's come from the struggles. And so if you can kind of show Jacob Pelche, hey, keep working your tail off, you're a big part of this, with a recall, I might consider that a higher priority than Grushnikov. Grushnikov's a first-year pro, right? And so similar to Jeremy Poirier, AHL all-rookie team last year, didn't get a look. Jan Kuznetsov, first pro season, didn't get a look. If Grushnikov doesn't get that nibble at the end of this season, I don't think it stalls his development at all. If you think that it would help him to see it, absolutely. It's not going to hurt him, but that recall, in my mind, might be better suited to Jacob Pelche.
What's your last one? Do you have a last one?
Yeah, you know, I've got a few left. I want to see, and I don't think I wouldn't be laying money on this, but this is different than a lineup spot or a recall. You know, I'd like to see Mackenzie Weegar continue to make a charge for that most goals by a defenseman. I think down the stretch, there are things that some of your veteran players can kind of grab onto cool accomplishments, milestones, whatever they may be, that can keep your older guys invested.
Like Carlson going for 100 points last year.
Yeah, yeah, similar to that. And, you know, right now Mackenzie Weegar has 16 goals on the season. That already obliterates his previous career high. But the most by NHL defenseman this year so far is Roman Josi at 18. And then you have Cale Makar and Rasmus Dahlin at 17. And so I just think those little individual accomplishments that a guy can chase, and if you can maybe help him out by giving him a few more shifts on the power play or whatever, I actually do think that's the sort of stuff a group can rally around. I think it can build a little bit more of a bond inside your room, you know, as guys are trying to set him up for that accomplishment. And so I don't think it's going to – we're not going to be sitting here next season talking about how it altered the course of the franchise or – change the culture in the room, but it's something I scribbled down as sort of a neat storyline to keep track of when it feels like not much else matters.
Think we can do it?
I think he's got a shot at it.
I mean, he scored that really nice goal in the last game against Washington to make it 4-2.
Yeah.
Nice little...
He ripped that thing.
Just murdered that puck.
Yeah.
So, and he can't. I know that they call him the Muffin Man, but he can get some juice on that thing.
The one thing that's going to make Roman Josi hard to track down, he shoots everything.
Yes.
Like, that guy, and as you've probably seen, the Predators are an absolute wagon right now. He's just firing everything. And so I know it's only a two-goal difference, but, you know, if Josi gets two or three more, I'm not sure anyone's tracking
him
down.
That's probably fair. Let's hit the text line. What do you want to see between now and the end of the regular season? It's Flames Talk underway on a Friday. Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson along with you. So Trevor writes, I'd like to see them lose as many games as possible and move up the draft board. Fair enough. I know there's plenty of people who are on board with that. And I think what you hear from a lot of people is, the losses are okay, but you still want them. You don't want them to be blowouts. You want them to be. This is not everybody, but some people want them to be competitive, but also would like a higher draft position. So make them entertaining, make them close, but you know, less good results would help in terms of where they end up drafting in June.
You know, what would be even better is win a few games down the stretch and get some luck in the lottery.
That could. I would. I've always gone into the lottery. We cover it every year, especially when the Flames miss the playoffs. I've never gone in thinking to myself, oh, well, I mean, the Flames are going to win it. They've never won it before, but it would be pretty cool if they did.
I would like the lottery balls to reward teams that don't check out down the stretch. Now, I know that's a big ask of things that just sort of bounce around, but that's what I'd like to think.
This says, more Wolf, less Markstrom. This says, could this mean that Huberdeau or Kadri get scratched to see the young guys from the American League? Probably not. Like, I don't think they might do something like, especially as we get into April, we might see them shut a few more guys down.
Yeah.
And that would allow for some emergency recalls and would allow for some guys to come in and get their feet wet in the NHL. I'm not saying Kadri or Huberdeau would be those guys, but, you know, definitely as seasons go along and it becomes more and more clear you're going to miss the playoffs, yeah, lots of teams will shut players down. So nagging injuries, those types of things, we could see something like that. Not suggesting it'll be those two guys, but, you know, if you're healthy, guys want to finish the year. Back to your point about Weegar, like,
yeah.
Nazem Kadri probably wants to see what he can finish the season with in terms of individual points. He's, you know, having a really nice year, could end up having, you know, the second or third best season in his career. And Blake Coleman wants to get to 30 goals for the first time.
Sure.
And who else is close to 30? Yegor Sharangovich wants to get to 30 for the first time. So I think you always have to remember that, you know, these are still pros. These guys are, they don't like to practice. They like to play, and they get paid to play.
And these are still, you know, tickets that don't come cheap for the people who want to go and watch. And I know that's something that the National Hockey League is cognizant of. Like, they don't want to see a ton of star power sitting for no reason. I think that's something that every organization should be cognizant of. You know, you don't want to see a group just bring up the Calgary Wranglers for the sake of it. And so, yeah, could you see one or two veteran guys scratch just to give an opportunity or a different sort of opportunity to a young player? Yeah, I think you could see that. But are we going to see like a preseason roster where all the big names are at the bottom under the scratches? I don't think so.
This reads from Kevin at Save On Foods Grocery Shopping. Wolf needs to get a stretch, 7 to 8 games, and Jeremy Poirier gets a game or two. This says, let the young kids play, give them lots of minutes, and hope the games are close but result in losses. Nathan writes, considering where the Flames are, I'd like to see Coronado utilized in a top-six role with Huberdeau and Sharon Govich. He's looked good during this recall, and to be honest, has looked more effective than Kuzmenko. I'd like to see a younger player in that spot and is probably more deserving. Do you think it's realistic for the Flames to scratch Kuzmenko? He's been way too inconsistent, in my opinion. I don't know about that, but I did write down Coronado on a line with Huberdeau.
Yeah.
So that's one that I would like to see. I don't know if it means that they would healthy scratch Kuzmenko. Maybe it just means you play him on a different line. But Coronado and Huberdeau with whether it's Sharon Govich or another center, that intrigues me going forward.
Yeah, and Kuzmenko might be. I don't want to start speculating about who could, you know, get the last few games off for health reasons, but. You know, we know Andre Kuzmenko was through an illness. That's not it. That's not the entirety of what's bothering him. He does have an injury that he's playing through as well. And so, you know, that's what I talk about, you know, scratching or, you know, sitting due to injury a specific guy because of an opportunity.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. Like, Matt Coronado needs that sort of opportunity. Matt Coronado, no different than us saying, well, I want to see how Connor Zary looks at center. Well, I want to see how Matt Coronado looks on a power play unit again. Something like that, right?
Yep. This from Dan and Cochran. Like to see Zary get a good number of reps at center. I'm trying to find who the last center was the Flames drafted and developed into an NHLer as a full-time center. Would it be Monahan? Yeah, it would be. That would be the last guy that they drafted and turned into a full-time center iceman.
Do we count Jankowski?
I mean, Monahan was drafted after Jankowski, so.
Yeah, and developed faster.
Slightly. And is still a regular in the NHL. This says, Peter from Bridgeland says, I'd like to see chemistry with the core and the newbies. Need to carry some building blocks into the offseason. Jim in the Southwest says, I'd like to see Pelche, Zary, and Coronado as a line for a few games.
What was that line again? Pelche, Zary, Coronado?
Yeah. Little kid line?
You know, when we were having the conversation about trying those kids at center, I was wondering how a Pospisil, Zary, Pelche line might look.
I don't mind that either.
Not sure who plays the right, probably Pospisil because he's been playing it all year, but just something to consider.
This says win out the season and make the playoffs. I like that. Honestly, like if they went on a miracle run, we'd love it. It would be awesome. And finally from the Beef, lose every game but April 6th. Competitive losses, no blowouts. Want to see the boys compete. I'd love to see Coronado down in the American League with a powerful number one line. Like to see Poirier for a couple of games with the big team and then equal Wolf and Markstrom. There you go. 960-960, your contributions in terms of what you want to see between now and the end of the regular season. It's Pat and Wes underway this hour on Flames Talk, and that'll do it for Inside Hockey for Calgary Co-op. Flames fans, meet Cal and Gary, top products curated for Calgarians, and we mean every single one of you. Only available at Calgary Co-op. Visit them today.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, time now for a Friday edition of our Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly clean car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish. It's Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson here at the Flames Community Arenas later on Friday at the Sportsnet 960 Beer League broadcast. And now we say hello to the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, to complete our Daily Flames roundtable. And gents, on Saturday night, it's the Flames and Vancouver Canucks for the third time this season. And for the first time since he was a member of the Carolina Hurricanes. Elias Lindholm will face off against the Calgary Flames, and the first time he'll face off against the Calgary Flames as a former member of the team. He's been with the Vancouver Canucks since late January when he was traded during the All-Star break. 4 goals, 8 points in 21 games since joining the Vancouver Canucks. So it has not been a super productive stretch for Elias since joining the Canucks, especially knowing he scored twice in his Vancouver debut. Guys, how surprised are we that the Lindholm fit for the Canucks hasn't been a rousing success?
Oh, I'm pretty surprised. I mean, 4 goals, and as you pointed out, 2 of them in the first game, and 8 points in 21 games is not what I was expecting production-wise for Elias Lindholm with the Canucks. Now, I'll admit, I haven't watched every single one of their games, and I don't know how he's been as far as a 200-foot player is concerned, and certainly he wouldn't be getting the opportunities with that team because they're loaded, that he was playing first-line center minutes and, you know, first or second unit power play and one of the stalwarts on the penalty kill when he was a member of the Flames, but still expected more production from him. Didn't expect him to score 2 goals a game like he did in his first game with the Canucks, but thought he would be close to a point-a-game player with that team, considering how explosive they are offensively. And then you take a look at one of the pieces that he was traded for. Andre Kuzmenko has 1 more goal, the same number of points, and has played in 6 fewer games than Elias Lindholm. And obviously, he's not as strong without the puck or as strong defensively as Lindholm is. But offensively, Kuzmenko has been just as productive, and he's bounced around the lineup. He's been in, he's been out, he's been on the first line, he's been on the fourth line. So he's been all over the place. So I'm surprised that Lindholm hasn't been more impactful. With that said, I don't think he will necessarily, at least at the end of the day, be judged on what he does to help the Canucks have regular season success. I think they picked him up to help them in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and I still think that, you know, he's the type of player who can definitely do that. And when the games get harder, you know, he's a type of guy who I believe can thrive, if only playing in a shutdown or a checking role and then trying to chip in a little bit offensively. So I still think he can be impactful for them in the postseason.
Yeah, I would echo that. Like, I do believe that's going to be a guy that if the Vancouver Canucks have any springtime success, is certainly going to be a part of it. I like the way you framed the question, Pat, because I'm not necessarily surprised it hasn't been a rousing success, which is a great word, by the way.
I thought so.
But I am surprised that it's been so unsuccessful so far, that it seems like it's just not jived yet in Vancouver, and like Wilsey, I can't tell you that I've watched every Canucks game, but we're talking about a guy who has twice, not just in his Canucks debut, but also one other time, scored 2 goals in a game, which means in his other 19 games he's scored a grand total of 0. And I think we chatted on this program, I know we chatted off mic on numerous occasions throughout the first few months of the season about, geez, this doesn't look like what we're expecting to see, or what we're accustomed is a better way to put it, from Elias Lindholm. Like, this is a guy who struggled through the first few months of the season with the Calgary Flames to have the sort of impact that we expect him to or we're used to seeing. And at least from afar, guys, it feels like that's carried on. I mean, can you judge a guy solely on points when he's playing on a line with Ilya Mikheyev and Sam Lafferty? No. When they gave up 5 pieces for him, was that the plan? Absolutely not. But we're talking about a guy who plays more than 2 minutes a night on the power play. He has 2 power play points in his past 21 games. And I think if you chatted with people in Vancouver, there were certainly some hints based on what they had seen in Calgary that this has been a rough season for Elias Lindholm. And again, judging sort of by the numbers and not having seen a ton of it myself, it looks like that's carried on the West Coast.
Yeah, it's I am surprised, honestly, guys. I thought it was going to be a smash. I really did. I thought Lindholm going there and having the opportunity, they put him with Elias Pettersson immediately. It didn't really work. It wasn't a fit with Elias Pettersson. They really seem committed. And by no means am I trying to be critical of Vancouver because of the season they're having. Looks like Rick Tocchet is pushing the right buttons and has a pretty good idea of what fits his roster. So this is by no means a criticism, but they seem very committed to Elias Pettersson and JT Miller, both at center. And when they for whatever reason, it was Kevin Woodley who told us this a couple of weeks ago. They don't seem enamored with Lindholm on the wing. And that's really interesting to me, guys, because his second best season in the NHL came on the right wing on the purple Gatorade line, which, by the way, I just randomly saw a video of that today, which I was like, I remember. Remember that? That was fun.
Always good.
But that line, it was Monahan in the middle, Johnny on the left, and Lindholm on the right. So we've seen him be close to a point-per-game guy playing with talent, high-end talent, and playing on the right side. So I wonder why the Canucks haven't been as enamored with Lindholm on the wing and why we haven't seen him on the right side of Elias Pettersson. Why that chemistry, they don't see that as something they want to test out meaningfully. That's interesting to me. And I'm also curious, you know, why it hasn't. They really thought that there was going to be a great fit on that first power play unit. He's not even on the number one power play unit anymore. He's centering the number two unit. And so that's been, so it's just, I'm surprised, guys. I thought the one thing that we all believed with Lindholm was when you get him, he's a great two-way player, and he does a lot of important things with a team as kind of that really important two-way shutdown center iceman. We know he can do that, but when you get him with good offensive players, then the numbers really pop. Well, there's good offensive players in Vancouver. He isn't playing with them right now, and when he has played with them, those numbers haven't popped either, which is really surprising to me.
Yeah, and we'll see how it plays out. It's tougher to produce points when you're playing on a third line. And when you're playing on the second power play and to a lesser extent the second penalty kill as he is right now. And I do feel better about my colleague Brendan Batchelor because having an Elias and an Elias on the same team, let alone the same line, I'm sure would leave me tongue-tied. So at least he doesn't have to deal with that right now. But he's a good hockey player. And in his defense, I think it can be hard to hit the ground running when you get traded in the middle of a season, especially when that season really wasn't going very well to begin with. And I do think that all of the noise weighed on him, more so than it did Nikita Zadorov before he got traded, and certainly more so than it did on Chris Tanev and Noah Hanifin before they got dealt. So it's maybe just been one of those seasons for Elias, but again, I think he's a really good player, and I still think that he has an opportunity to be impactful when it matters the most, and that's when the Canucks get to the playoffs, and he's asked to go head-to-head with the other team's top players on a regular basis.
Yeah, I agree with that. The only thing I'll add, guys, and this isn't me taking a shot at a guy who's now out of town, but I think this reflects pretty well on Craig Conroy. Not even just the trade part, but I think the refusal to add more dollars to that contract offer that the Lindholm camp sat on for an extended stretch. You know, I think Craig Conroy sticking to his guns is going to look back on that and say, yeah, that was the right move, because Elias Lindholm, unless he just has a whammy of a playoffs, has certainly going to have to settle for a little less loot than he was angling for.
Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wills, Wes Gilbertson, Pat Steinberg on this Friday. And we'll just continue on with the Lindholm conversation. What do we actually think now? And I know it's still only been a month and a half or so since the deal was made. And we talked about Kuzmenko on Thursday's show, Wes, with Vix. And we were all kind of like, where does he fit long term? Does he fit long term? And all of us were kind of like, we don't know. But when you take a look at the trade and in its totality, a month and a half or ish in, how do we feel about the deal the Flames swung with Vancouver?
I mean, it looks great right now. Hard to argue that. Now, if Lindholm helps the Canucks win a Stanley Cup, we might feel, or I might feel a little bit differently about it. But right now, it looks like an excellent trade for Craig Conroy. And for me, it's way more about what the Flames might get in the future as a part of the deal than what they've received from Andrei Kuzmenko so far. I mean, the fact that he's got the same number of points and one more goal in six fewer games than Elias Lindholm does. That's not a bad trade-off in itself from a Flames perspective. And the fact that it's allowed the Flames to elevate some players, specifically Yegor Sharangovich, into a bigger role as the team's, I call him, first-line centerman, especially when he's playing in a line with Jonathan Huberdeau. But he's playing an elevated role now, five-on-five and on the power play. So to see him having success, having transitioned from right wing to center, I think that's been a win for the Flames as well. But again, this for me is more about what the deal could do for the Flames down the road. And I know when the trade was made, there was some concern that the Flames would not be able to sign the best prospect in the deal, Hunter Brustevich. But he has signed, and I think there's a pretty good chance he makes his professional debut between now and the end of the regular season, and that certainly would be exciting for the Flames. And if you're Brustevich, I guess you want the Kitchener Rangers to go on a run, and maybe that won't happen this year. But, you know, his future looks pretty bright. So looking forward to seeing what he turns into. And, of course, you also get first and fourth round picks, and that fourth round pick I believe could be a third round pick, right? Depending on what happens here. So
yeah,
I think it's a fantastic trade for the Flames right now. Maybe fantastic is too strong a word. I think it's a really good trade for the Flames today. I think it could be a great trade for Craig Conroy if Brustevich turns out to be an NHL player and a good one. I don't know a lot about Yoni Yermo, to be honest with you, but maybe he'll turn into something. But then you've got a first-round pick, and that better turn into something. So when you consider all of those factors and that this might turn into a deal where Elias Lindholm becomes a free agent in the summertime anyway, and the Canucks paid a huge price for a rental, then, again, I think that favors the Flames in the trade.
Yeah, I'm totally intrigued, guys, by Hunter Brustevich. I can't wait to see him play with my own two eyes. We're talking about a guy who is tied for the lead among all defensemen in the Canadian Hockey League. So yeah, that's 60-some major junior outfits, tied for the most points by a defenseman with 90, leads the entire Canadian Hockey League, and by a country mile with 77 assists. Like, there just seems to be oodles of skill there, and I'm excited to see that. I think if he is a keeper and if you can hit on that first-round pick, then this deal's already a slam dunk. I will say, and I know you guys talked about it yesterday, but I'll just throw my two cents in. I'm having trouble at this point seeing where Andre Kuzmenko fits. And I realize that was sort of a salary dump part of the equation. I know he's put some numbers, at least the same kind of numbers as Lindholm, on the board in fewer games, and that's all good. I just don't know how he sort of fits in the short or the long-range plan at the Saddle Dome, and I just hope he doesn't. I hope he's not getting opportunities at the expense of a Matt Coronato, for example, if he's not deserving of them next year. I think if this is a guy who is inconsistent, and there's been some illness, I think he's being bothered by a relatively significant injury. So maybe we haven't seen the best of Andre Kuzmenko. I don't know exactly where he fits.
The guys, I think so. Number one is that we can't obviously judge the trade until we see what all the pieces turn into, of course. But what I think we can judge is the kind of asset maximization that the Flames did with Elias Lindholm. And what the things turn into will ultimately determine how successful the overall big picture is. But I think the Flames, you can give them a beyond passing mark with how they were able to maximize Lindholm. The fact that they got the things that were important, the two things that were important were a first-round pick and a top prospect. And while they didn't get Lekera Mäki or, you know, the top 1-2% prospects in Vancouver's organization, they really like Brustevich. The Canucks probably would have liked Brustevich more if he was willing to sign there, which It sounds like he wasn't. Kind of felt like with Roenick and Hughes there, he didn't really have a natural spot, so maybe signing in Vancouver was never going to be a thing, which probably dropped him down on the Vancouver priority list. Again, we've made the Adam Fox comparison, and that's a fair one, especially we can make that now because he signed with the Flames, so a little bit of easier breathing. So you get a top prospect, you get a first-round pick, so you check those things, you get the roster player, which has been fine, it is what it is, and then you get the two other lottery picks. I don't know much about Joni Yermo either, but he's a prospect, and I don't know where he ranks on Calgary's internal prospect list, but he's still a prospect. That's a lottery ticket, and you get another pick as well that could turn into something or could be capital to use in another deal down the road. So I just think from a straight-up asset maximization standpoint, the Flames did hit a home run on the Lindholm deal, and now we have to determine, like, how long a home run. Is it a 500-foot no-doubter, or does it just go over the left field wall and inch past? You know, that's what we now have to determine after the assets have been acquired.
Yeah, and I mean, right now, and we have to wait for this thing to play out. We have to wait to see if Elias Lindholm starts to have more success with the Canucks. We have to wait to see if Andre Kuzmenko can find a spot that suits him on this team. I think he's still searching. They're still trying to figure out who he is and what he is, and we have to see how these prospects and picks turn out. But right now, a deal with the Canucks involving Andre Kuzmenko and one of Hunter Brustavich or a first-round pick for Elias Lindholm, I'm not sure that would be a bad deal today. Not be a good deal tomorrow, but today that deal would look pretty good from a Flames perspective because, again, both players have been equally as productive offensively, and you get a first-round pick or you get a top-notch prospect in addition to that. But the Flames get more than that. They get another prospect, and they get a fourth-round pick that could become a third-round pick. So today it looks like a really good deal for the Flames, and I will have to really spend some time waiting to see how everything else plays out before I think we can really evaluate the trade. But I think it was good work by Craig Conroy. He had an asset who he wasn't going to be able to re-sign, at least not for the price or the term that he wanted to, and he decided to move on from him. And when he got the right offer, he pulled the trigger. He didn't wait, and I think he got a really good deal. So job well done by the Flames GM.
Thank you, Wilsey. We will see you Saturday. Have a great rest of your Friday, hey?
Actually, I'll see you a little bit later. I'm going to make an appearance at this Beer League thing. So
we'll see you later on Friday then.
All right.
He's Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll wrap us up on our Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly clean car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca, and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish. As we start to wrap up this hour, Wes Gilbertson on Twitter, at Wes Gilbertson. Thanks to Cam and Shan for making sure everything sounds good back downtown in our downtown studio. This hour wraps up. This has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockandSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.